I know y'all have got a lot to absorb. We've gone through a lot of information in a pretty brief period of time. And let me give you a perspective of what goes into what you're seeing in a nutshell today. Every day when we go into our offices, we have 1,500 to 2,000 data sets that update overnight that we're looking at, sorting through, and using that to derive the information that we're sharing with you on a daily and weekly basis. So when we focus on it, one of the challenges that our board gave us 15 years ago, said, we don't want your opinion, we want data-driven analysis. Data-driven analysis that is decision-friendly. And hopefully you've seen that on display today. And I'll try to stay with that focus as we go through and we try to tie some of this together and give you a perspective for what we see over the course of the next several years. I think when you look at where we've been and you think about the market we've been in, obviously it really doesn't matter unless we were in the drought-stricken area of California where we really tied our hands in being able to participate fully in this. This has been an incredible run, hasn't it? I know a lot of you like me in the room wish your father or mother could be with you today to see this. They were still here on this earth to be able to see and enjoy the run that they spent their entire lives looking for and we never really had. So we've had a big push, haven't we? And I think you can see that it wasn't all just because of the cattle markets. It wasn't all about cattle numbers. It was about cattle. It was about pork, not having enough pork to fill the void, not having enough poultry to fill the void, plus a very good export market that we've enjoyed over the course of the last several years. So I think as you think about what we've done here, I want you to go back and put this in perspective. It's June of 2013. June of 2013. Stay with me. We're selling fed cattle at $1.19. November 2014, 18 months later, we're trading fed cattle at $1.73. In that same time span, feeder cattle went from $1.30 to $2.45, and we know calf prices doubled. Pretty good run, wasn't it? Now, do any of us expect that we can stay at those levels? Again, it was a perfect storm that allowed that to happen for things to get as pushy as they did. This, I think, will give you a little bit of perspective. I've been with Cattle Facts since 1981. This data goes back just a little bit further than that. This is the only years in history that our net beef supply, so this is net of trade, have declined more than 4% on an annual basis. That's all of them since 1975. And you can see when we had those drops in production, what kind of price shot we had in each of those years. You look in the middle of the graph, what do you see there? Well, in the middle of the graph there, you see 2 years where we only got a 12 and a 4% increase in prices when we had that kind of supply shock. What was going on then? Don't forget, we went through a 20-year decline in beef demand from 1979 to 2008 where demand was cut in half. And that's why those prices didn't respond in that particular time period. Most of these other times we saw a 23, 24, 25% response as we came through those, very similar to what we've seen this year. Well, what do we see in retail? Kevin talked about higher retail prices, but to give you a perspective in here, just over the last 12 months, from the fourth quarter of 2013 to the fourth quarter of 2014, we've seen a 22 to 23% increase in retail prices. Is it any surprise when you think about that, that we're seeing some pushback? Why do we have higher retail prices? Because we had to ration a smaller supply, didn't we? The market had to ration a smaller supply. Beef consumption in the United States dropped 11 pounds from where it was in the previous decade to where we were in 2014. And it's taken these record high prices to where people just can't enjoy as much of our product because it's not available. And Brett showed you globally it's not available either, is it? So keep that in perspective of why these markets have had the magnitude of the move that they have here over the course of the last several years. We're going to see some correction in these markets as we move forward. I think if you go back and you look at the situation, Kevin touched on this real briefly, but I think this is really an important concept for you all to get. Those of you that are readers of the Cattle Facts Update, we publish this in our November 20th newsletter, making sure that you understood how extreme these markets were getting and why they were at the levels that they were. Our markets moved up $28 a hundred on average in 2014. Of that, only $8 a hundred of that price increase came from supply. The balance of it came from demand increases and leverage. Now, let me give you a perspective on demand. From that 1998 low that I spoke of, beef demand in this country has increased $225 per head. This is a real deal. Why do you think that is? Have we done a better job of listening to the consumer? Are we putting out all different kinds of product today that we weren't 15 years ago? We've got everything under the sun out there, don't we? And we have customers that want all different kinds of product. And as an industry, we're responding to that signal. And I think that's why we're enjoying the demand growth that we're seeing, not only in the United States, but globally. And I challenge you all to stay focused on that. Stay focused on that. Why are we only going to sell 20% of all the fed cattle in the United States in the cash market this year? Because most of you are willing to plug your animals into these various niche programs and niche markets that will reward you for hitting those targets more times than not, aren't they? So I think that's a transition that we'll go through and one that will be discussed at length. This leverage component that Kevin talked about earlier, this is the part of it that's fickle, isn't it? We enjoyed that $11 a hundred increase in leverage because we were taking the skin out of the packer and the retailer. That's what can be given up very quickly, and that's part of what you've seen shift back to those segments in here over the course of the last 30 days. This leverage shift is taking place as we speak. Now, cow-calf producers, a year ago I shared with you that as we'd gone through all the analysis out here, we believe that we could handle another 3 million beef cows in our inventory. Instead of 29 million, we could handle 32 million, maybe as many as 33 million, and still be highly profitable. Now, when I say highly profitable, I'm not suggesting we're going to stay profitable at the same levels that we enjoyed in 2014 or we'll enjoy here in early 2015, because we are at those peaking calf prices today. Calf prices peaked in 14 and the first half of 15. You need to be prepared for calf prices to be much more seasonal in 2015. We won't see them continue to push higher through the end of the year. They'll be much more seasonal in this following year. But I think when you look at this, we still expect, even as we come through and we come off these prices up in here that pushed up around $2.85 on the U.S. average, we still expect that we're going to end up averaging back in here in this 2 to 2.25 area on calf prices for a number of years. There's a huge variation in production costs across this industry. We need to all remember that. I think our data would suggest that the difference in production costs for cow-calf producers would range anywhere from anywhere from about $500 a head up to about $1,100 a head, depending on the region that you operate in and your management practices. That's a lot of variation, isn't it? So keep that in mind as you look at that. We've seen a big push in bred cow values and bred heifer values. A number of you are in that program, and I wanted you to see the data. I wanted you to see what these numbers would look like over time. And what you're looking at here is the number of calves that needed to pay for a bred cow. Historically, if you go back and look at this, we're around 1.5 to 1.6 550-pound steer calves to pay for a bred cow. And you'll see a little bit of variation in it, but this is data that this particular chart goes back to the late 80s. I could take it back into the late 70s. It would show you the same basic thing. The bottom line with that, it would suggest that bred heifers back in here, you know, 2,300, 2,600, that would be more of a realistic value as we see these prices start to shift and come back down. That's probably a realistic value in here for a market value for these bred heifers. Some of these got pretty rich in here through the fall when we were paying $3,500 for bred heifers, and I think it's important that we make sure we continue to do our homework and know what the value equation is here. We think about these feeder cattle and calf markets. Again, incredible push. This is looking at the change in price levels from the low to a high during the course of a year. 46% move. 46% move. Again, we had record profitability in the stocker and backgrounding side, didn't we? Now we've got high price inventory, and that market's changing pretty rapidly, isn't it? We've gone through basically with what March feeders have done. March feeders have had about a 20% break, an adjustment from where we were with these fall highs, where we had feeder cattle prices at $245. And we had them back to 195 in here earlier this week. So again, that's not unprecedented. That would be a very normal kind of a break that we would see in here on feeder cattle when we come through these kind of transitions. But we've had the big push, and as Kevin said, the longer term highs are in these feeder cattle. Same situation with calves. We're in the process of doing that. I think this data can really help you understand the spreads that we're seeing in these markets. If you look at the left-hand side of the graph, you'll see this range from 130 to 170. That would be what we would call the deferred live cattle, the futures market that you're placing cattle against. And we're assuming we've got corn in this example at about $3.75. Look at the spread on feeder cattle. The feeder-fed spread, if we're sitting here with cattle at 130, we're at a $46 spread. What about when we push cattle up in here to 170? We were trading fed cattle in the low 170s. Kevin mentioned to you earlier, we had the deferred futures all trading in the low 170s. Feeder cattle, it would have suggested go basically to 245. Where did they go to? 244, 245, didn't they? And look where the feeder fed spread was. Basically at a 70, on top of a $70 spread. And you see what's going on in here. Just keep in mind, when we went up, for every $5 we put on fed cattle, we put $8.50 on feeder cattle. And we're doing the same thing on the way back down because of the compression in these spreads. So that's why these markets are moving the way they are. The expanded limit that we saw up to $4.50 on feeder cattle, that was needed relative to what's going on in these spreads and the cost of gains. So that was definitely needed in here to balance these markets back out. Kevin talked to you a minute about using the term contra-seasonal. This has been a contra-seasonal pattern. We've talked to you about that in our updates in here through the fall, that these are markets that tend to be underperforming. And again, it's not because of supply. It's not because of supply. When you go back and think about that chart I shared with you that showed that demand and leverage was worth 21 of the $28 move that we saw in prices in this last year, That's where we're seeing the adjustment. We're seeing the adjustment with leverage and demand. Now, is this unique with what we're seeing in the cattle market right now? Think about what we see in these kind of years, and you think about what's going on in the milk market. Those of you in the dairy business, pretty darn good year, wasn't it? If we'd have had that up in here, dairy profitability, it would have matched right up with what we've seen in the beef cattle industry in 2014. Record profits in the dairy industry, record profits in the pork industry, record profits in the poultry industry. All of the protein markets had an incredible run. But as they all do run their course too, don't they? And think about where milk prices are now. We've gone from milk prices in here in the mid-20s to where the futures are telling us they're going to be back at $15 to $16 as we get into spring. So that price relationship, the market setup that we see in a number of these commodities is very similar. And I'll touch on that in a little more detail. Kevin shared with you the ranges that we expect to be trading in here this next year. I'm going to focus on some of the margin piece of the business in here for the next several years. This is our situation with fed cattle. Again, the long-term highs are in the fed cattle market. If you go back and you look at these parallel lines on the chart, you'll find that when these markets go and they push into new and higher trading ranges, you tend to make a several-year high on that initial push. And then you get into a pattern where you make lower highs and lower lows over the course of the next several years. And that's what you should be aware of. Again, the launching point on this rally was back in here at 130 in the fall of 2013. And I'm not suggesting that we have to trade back to that level this year, but I think you need to be prepared for us to be back into that level by as early as next year as these supplies do start to build and we see continued growth in competing meat supplies. So the markets are going to adjust in here just as you'd expect. From a profitability standpoint, though, take a look at what we have here. We know when we look at the cattle feeding side historically, it tends to be, when we look at it, assuming no risk management, it tends to be a break-even business. And if I were to take 2014 out of this calculation over here, 2014 we made on average over $220 a head. I take that out, guess what that number is, Craig, for 2010 to 2013? It's minus $13 a head. Minus $13 a head. So you can see how much that skewed the data when we added that next year in. What do you expect that's telling you when we look at the next 4 or 5 years? As Kevin said, the margins are going to be tough, aren't we? We still have a lot of feeding capacity that is chasing a very small supply. That tells us we have to be focused on managing risk. And managing risk is different than trading. Okay? We need to make sure we're margin focused. This market just went up 40 to 50%. It just went up 40 to 50%. We've got some longer term highs in. We need to make sure we're managing risk. And we understand what some of the pitfalls are as we move forward. The volatility that we've had in this market, as Jerry mentioned in his opening comments today, this has been unprecedented. Look at these swings. 5 to 10% swings every few weeks. It's incredible, isn't it? 5 to 10% swings, that's $8 to $16 a hundred. $8 to $16 a hundred. We're just talking about over time, this is a break-even business, and we got margins moving $100 to $150 a head. And don't take yourself too seriously. There isn't any of us that can forecast these moves. Right? Right. This is some wild times we're dealing with. So again, we have to set back in here. We need to make sure we're focused on when the market gives us some margin that we can capture out here. We need to make sure that we're not what? Betting thy whole wad. Okay? And I think that's really important when you start to look at what we have here. This market's been in the process of making a top for the last 5 or 6 months. You can see it in here. If you just look at this chart, we continue to have these pushes up in here. We'd push up to 165, we'd break. We'd push up to 168, we'd break. We'd push up to 170, we'd break. We'd push up to 172, we'd break. That's the way you form tops in markets. And that's what we've been in the process of doing in here for the last 3 or 4 months. I would remind you of this. The market did a very good job of pricing this supply. This shows you February cattle in November went to 172.75. Where did April go? 171.10. Where did June go? 163. What is June when you adjust for basis at 163? What kind of price are you locking in for May on a June board at 163? Low 170s. Okay? You have to make sure you're adjusting for basis in here. And again, don't be using the old catalog and basis. All of those old basis studies are based on a market that averaged $70 from 1980 to 2003. Not a market that averages $1.50 now at these price levels, twice as high. You have to adjust your basis accordingly. Okay? Make sure we're doing that. It's critically important in here as you're thinking about risk management in these markets. This is the basis that we enjoyed this last year. A number of you in the room are risk managers. This was a freebie you got, wasn't it? You're managing risk in here. Our basis is normally a negative 50 cents to a dollar, and we end up with a positive basis of $2.67 basis to plains. If I was showing you that relative to Nebraska, it would be another dollar 100 more positive than what I'm showing you here. This would be basis Kansas. Is the basis going to stay that positive as we move forward? It's going to stay positive, but it's not going to stay at that kind of extreme. I think you need to be prepared for the basis to start to move and shift as we get on into the second quarter and particularly on into the third quarter. But one thing you all need to take into account. When you looked at the charts that Brett showed you and Mike showed you, when you look at the economy, what was going on? What was going on with commodities? When you looked at those commodity indexes, they've all peaked, haven't they? They've peaked and they've been heading lower. The money has been leaving these markets. If you looked at open interest in our futures markets today, we've got 120,000 fewer open interest in our cattle markets today than we had a year ago. We've got 65,000 fewer funds that are participating, long funds that are participating in our markets today. You need those. You need those to be able to lay risk off, don't you? Well, they're sitting out here. They're looking at all these things that are going on. The dollar, our positioning, competitive meats, all those things that are happening, say, hey, there's not as big a bet out there, is there? There's not as big a bet out there as there was 2 years ago when we saw that big increase. So it makes sense, and I think it's important that you connect the dot, and I don't think we're going to be bringing all that money back in here anytime soon. But that does have an influence in here. And again, part of the reason you're trading such a strong basis today is because we don't have as much of that participation in here. We don't have as much of that speculative money in the market. And I think if you go one step further, what's that mean from a hedge level in our industry today? We've just come off record high prices, and my guess is we don't have a real good hedge position in total in our industry. We've probably got more exposure than we've had for quite some time from what I can see out here. So that's a little bit of a scary proposition. We talk about volatility. I just want to remind you, these markets move 20 to 22% from their annual highs to annual lows year in and year out. You'll have a few exceptions to that. You can see it on the chart. But in general, that's what you're seeing, a 20 to 22% move. What's that mean from a dollars per head standpoint? Now everybody understands what I'm saying. We've got to focus on managing risk. These are some big, big swings that we're talking about in here. Again, we've already done this in 15. We are at $475. We've already had a $468 move when you adjust for basis-wise with where our futures are in here today. So this is big stuff. Again, focus on managing risk. Take those margins when they're there. It obviously takes an incredible amount of capital, doesn't it? I'm sure most of you can't hardly believe the amount of money that you're borrowing in your operations today. And I just remind you, your lender does expect to be paid back. So stick to your knitting, stay focused in here. This isn't going to change anytime soon with the amount of capital that's required. And with the volatility, that's a big deal. It's a big deal, and that's not going to change anytime soon. From an overall industry standpoint, you got a little bit of a mixed bag, but there's been a consistent factor in here that we've seen. Kevin touched on it briefly. I want you to think about this. Over the last 20 years, the value of beef and beef byproduct exports has increased 6% a year. So when we had the unfortunate situation with BSE, it cost us $175 a head. Boom. Look where we are today. $352. If we'd lost access to our export markets today, that's what it would cost us. When our markets open back up, that's how much lower we would be. Does everybody understand that? Again, as we expand our involvement in global markets, the risk does increase, doesn't it? It does increase. It's not just a one-way street. Again, that's part of the reason that you need to make sure you're updating your risk management plan as we move forward in these kind of environments. The good thing is, if this trend continues, if it continues, these exports could be contributing as much as $500 a head back to the value of each and every animal in our inventory as we move into this next decade. To give you a perspective, in 2009, this is not very long ago, 2009, beef and beef byproduct exports, poultry exports, pork and pork byproduct exports, and dairy exports totaled $13 billion. $13 billion. What do you think they totaled in 2014? $26 billion. $26 billion in five short years. A $13 billion increase. So when you see the focus we're putting on these global markets and the influence that they have, and the influence that they have on the way these markets move, I think it's important that you can connecting those dots and understand what it really means to you. We look at the markets, I think you understand the situation. Beef supply is pretty flat. The supply shock was in 14. There's no supply story in 15. Supply shock was in 14 when U.S. production was down 6%, net beef supplies were down 4%. Obviously, increases in pork and poultry. We're going to give the leverage gains back. We've already given some of that back. We're going to see the basis go from a very positive basis. It'll start to weaken back out. I don't think we'll go all the way back to our long-term norms just because we don't have the outside money in the markets. But we'll definitely see a basis shift during the second half of the year. We will continue to be a major player in the global meat trade. The U.S. and Brazil export 50% of all the meat protein around the globe. I don't see that changing. We will continue to be major players as long as we have a level playing field. Brett mentioned the trade agreements. A lot of the things that Meat Export Federations does for all of us to get broader access across these markets all around the globe, their work is so, so important to us. And we need to continue to support that organization all we can to give us better access and keep the level playing field fair for each and every one of us. The global buying power, absolutely no doubt about what we're seeing there. We know where we are relative to that. I think you all understand with what I've gone through why we have to focus on managing risk. Managing risk, and those of you in the cow-calf side, I'd reiterate, I think we're going to have several very, very good years in the cow-calf side. Not as good as it was in 14 and 15, but that's pretty hard to duplicate, isn't it? You can smile. That's been a pretty fun. It's been pretty fun, and it'll continue to be good. It just won't be quite as good as it was over the course of the last few years.